Listen to Shoot the Defence. It's unbelievable, Jeff.
Welcome to Shoot the Defence on FNX, brought to you by My Sportswear Save Association and Youth Energy. I'm your host, Stel, and I'm joined by none other than Brentford legend, Lloyd Owusu. Lloyd, great to have you on the show. Finally, mate. How's it going?
Wicked. Yeah, all blessed, to be fair. All good down under. I can't complain at all.
Down under. So you're down there with watching Neighbours and Home and Away and all that, yeah?
Yeah, probably about 3 or 4 months ahead of the UK. The UK ones, but yeah, all good, mate.
Do you miss British soaps, or do you catch them, or did you not ever watch them?
No, to be fair, I do miss EastEnders, and I'll be honest now, I've probably not seen EastEnders realistically for probably the five years that I've been there. Wait. So I did used to watch it all the time on a Tuesday and a Thursday back home, but like, I think now I've missed it for many a year now.
You haven't missed much, mate. I guess you're probably one of these Netflix guys, yeah?
Yeah, bits and bobs, too much. To be fair, since I've been in this country, mate, the TV's hardly ever on.
Yeah?
Because, yeah, I mean, I think just because of the lifestyle, you know, you're always active and you're always outside. Really, rarely, even when I come home from training or from work, the TV's very hardly on, mate.
Yeah, I don't blame you. I mean, you just mentioned the lifestyle, and, you know, it's a far cry from Slough, which is where you began your career, is that right?
Yeah, don't get me wrong. So obviously, that's where my butt was bred, you know. Where Slough Town football, and obviously being born and bred in Slough, and that's where my home comforts are. I mean, obviously I've got great memories of there, but just respect to Slough, or the whole of the UK. My thought process of coming down under 6 years ago was all about a lifestyle choice, especially for my two young kids. Mm. I mean, I was only back about 3 weeks ago back in the UK, and I sort of summoned myself up and said, yeah, you know what, you've made the right decision where you are in Australia for lifestyle, outdoor living, weather. So I don't regret nothing.
That's good to hear, mate. Well, look, forgive me for the personal question, but how old are your kids?
So my girl, Ajaya, she's 8, and my boy, Tyrese Lloyd, he's 5 now.
Great. So what? How can you compare the educational system out there compared to the UK?
To be fair, here's top draw, the educational system. The public schools are very much really like private schools, to be fair, the way they're run and structured. Again, outdoor living in regards of their social side and physical side. And just a safe environment, you know, just a real safe environment. And just lovely, mate.
Mm. I bet you've never seen a no ball game sign out there, have you?
Oh, mate, never. Everywhere, just people active doing everything, mate.
Yeah. It's not what it's like out here, as you obviously know. Well, look, let's talk about your career, mate. And you said you played for Slough Town. You then moved to Brentford in 98. How did that move come about?
Do you know what? It's actually quite a good story, to be fair, because I was playing for Slough Town. I made my debut as I was about an 18-year-old. And I scored 4 goals in my debut against Telford. And the following season, or even that season as well, the following season, a lot of pro clubs were coming to watch me. They'd all heard about this young boy had scored 4 goals in the conference. So anyway, we played in the following season. We played in the FA Trophy for Slough Town. We got to the semi-final, got robbed by an offside goal which should never have stood. And then we end up even. I think we ended up even about 7th in the league. So anyway, the ground the following season, the FA or the Conference League, they said to the chairman, if you guys do well you get promotion, you will not be able to go up because your ground... Sorry, no, they even said no. For your stand of your ground in the actual conference isn't good enough to be in the conference.
Right.
And even like the chairman was like, no way, the ground's okay, it's got its seats, whatever. So there was massive conflict of interest there. So he said he went against him and said, no, I'm not going to make no improvements. So the league demoted Slough Town from the conference into, I don't even know what the league was, but prior to that we had a lot of good youngsters, myself, Danny Bolt, who else was there, Derek Simpson, and we were all like 18, 19, 20 year olds thinking, hold on, we've all signed 2-year contracts here, so we were here to play in the conference. And then I pulled Brian McDermott and I said, no disrespect, Gaffer, but I'm not going to go to a division below when we haven't really we've not even been deemed as if we've been relegated or anything, and I've still got a year left in my contract. So he goes, oh, don't worry, I'm going to try and get all you youngsters, try and get you trials at pro clubs and better conference clubs. So we're like, okay, fair enough. So I get a phone call, say, Lloyd, I've got you a 4-week trial up at Walsall, who at the time were, I think the old league, yeah, would have been league, they were league, yeah, so the League One now. And I was like, wow, I couldn't believe it. I was thinking, wow, going to a pro club. And I remember going, so I went there for pre-season and seeing players like Michael Ricketts back in the days, wow. Clive Platt, and I mean these were youngsters, but they were still playing first team football. I was like, wow, this is so surreal. So I was so nervous coming from non-league football to go and train with these boys full time. So anyway, it's about two weeks into the trial, I get a phone call from Brian McDermott. He says, oh, Lloyd, I've sold you. I said, what? He goes, I've sold you to Brentford. I said, you joking me, Gaffer? He goes, no, I've sold you to Brentford for £25,000. I'm like, wow. He goes, listen, go in the morning, see Ray Graydon, the manager of Walsall, so just tell him thank you for the opportunity, but we've sold you. So anyway, I've gone in the morning, I've seen Ray Graydon, and I said, oh, Gaffer, obviously Brian, he's probably called you. He goes, yeah. He goes, well, he goes, congratulations on the move. He goes, we want to see you for a bit longer, but if you've got something concrete, you've got to take it. So anyway, I'm driving down the M6 back to London to go and meet Brian McDermott at my mum's house, and then he was going to drive me to Heathrow Airport to go and meet Ron Nodes and Ray Lewin, because they were flying out to La Manga pre-season training.
That's right.
So on my journey back, I was phoning up the agent I had at the time called Lanry. I said, oh, Lanry, obviously just Brentford bought me for 25. We need to go and meet Ron Nodes and Ray Lewin to get it all signed and sealed. He goes, okay, meet me at the airport. So myself and Brian went, and then Lanry came. He came back 10 minutes later. Got to the airport, met Ron Nodes, all nervous, and I saw the players in the queue ready to go to board the plane. And I was like, wow, man, this is just crazy. I just can't believe I'm in a non-league player, 20 years of age, seeing all these players that I've seen on TV before. So anyway, Ron Nodes goes, this is a contract. It's a 3-year contract. I'm going to give you £350 a week, £1,000 a goal. And I was like, wow, I've come from £50-£75 a week at Slough Town to, I was thinking, this is just beautiful. It's just like surreal. Yeah. And then Lanry, all of a sudden, he goes, no, we're not signing this. I'm like, in my head, I'm thinking, what? He's like, no, we're not. This is derisory. This offer is derisory. We have loads of clubs interested in my client. He was this black guy, Nigerian guy, really posh spoken. He was a barrister. He goes, no, we're not signing. This is a derisory offer. And one of those goes, well, if you don't want to offer, we're leaving in 20 minutes. If you don't want to sign it, we're off and there's no deal. So I said, Lanry, I want to say. He goes, no, we're not signing, Lloyd. So I phoned up my mentor, Danny Bailey, who was at Slough Town when I was a kid, and he was a real major influence in my career. I phoned up Danny. I said, tell Lanry, I don't give a damn what they're offering me. I've got a 3-year deal on the table, ready to sign for Brentford. So then Danny spoke to Lanry, and then Lanry goes, okay, for the payout, he signed, he can sign. So anyway, I ended up signing for Brentford. Luckily, I thought they were going to go, but yeah, so I signed on the dotted line. They went to La Manga for 10 days. I stayed home, went for medical, met up with the club secretary, done all the legitimate paperwork, and then signed the official paperwork, and then I was a Brentford player. So they came back from La Manga, and then I just joined them with pre-season, and as they say, the rest is history.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you mentioned Ron Nodes, and I know that there was a major overhaul going on at the club, so you joined just as the transition was made, because I think Ron Nodes was chairman and manager, wasn't he? And he brought in Ray Lewington, I think Terry Bullivant was there, and Brian Sparrow.
And Brian Sparrow, correct.
There you go. So what did you make of what was going on at the club at the time, or were you none the wiser because obviously you just joined when everything had happened?
I mean, I just joined, but to be fair, because Brentford was so local to Slough, and I had some friends who were there in the youth team, and even players like Marcus Benn, who I knew sort of briefly, I always followed them anyway. And then obviously they'd been relegated into the old third or fourth division then.
That's right, yeah.
So it was like, because obviously that was Mickey Adams, I think it was Mickey Adams the year before. So Ron Nodes, when he came in, he wiped the whole old clique out. And then he came in, and his goal was to say, you know what, I'm going to rebuild this club and get them back up the leagues. And fair play to him. With, like you say, he brought in some great coaches, Ray Lewin, top coach, Bullivant and Sparrow. And then he just mixed the team with nurture of youth, non-league and experience. And it just worked an absolute treat. And like I said, we went on to win the league and the championship.
That's right. I mean, you mentioned the non-league players. I think Martin Rowlands and Darren Powell joined the club at the same time. Did that ease the pressure a little bit?
Yeah, it did. But it was weird because I'll always remember the beginning of the first, we're obviously doing our pre-season training. And for me, I'm going into Brentford thinking I'm just going to be a bit part player, here, there, everywhere, just come play reserves, have a bit of experience with all these senior players. So I'll always remember Ray Lewin was naming the starting 11 before the first game of the season against Mansfield. So he said Powdy was, so he's naming the team, so Powdy's then got called out, and then Martin Rowland, so I'm thinking I'm going to be at least on the bench. And then he said Lloyd, and then I was number 11 at the time, he said Lloyd Wusu. And I'll always remember, I looked over and I saw Warren Aspinall, great player. I mean, he was a great leader in the team, but he was could have been a bit of a funny one. I'll always remember him shaking his head, thinking, he's just thinking to himself, what the hell, we're going into the first game of the season as sort of favourites to win this league, and we've got three non-league players who've never played the game. Mate, we've gone into that game. Martin got man of the match. Powdy played an absolute blinder. I mean, I played about 70 minutes, 75 minutes. And it was brilliant. It was so surreal.
Yeah, I can imagine, mate. I know Ron Knowles made a lot of changes in personnel throughout the season, and it didn't really affect you because you finished the club's leading scorer. Did you expect to have such a good debut season?
Never. Like I said before, I expected to be the bench player, just playing reserve games all the time and just learning my trade, you know. But I ended up looking back, when I look back at that season, I was the only player who actually played all 56 games.
Mm. Wow. Wow. And these days, a lot of footballers cry about playing so many games, so...
Yeah.
especially at that level, man. Well, look, Steve Coppell, I know he took over in 2001 and he guided Brentford to the playoff final, which unfortunately you guys lost 2-0 to Stoke, and you know what they say, the rest is history with Stoke. Did you feel at that time that you'd done all you could for the club? Because you've been there for, what, 4 or 5 years?
Yeah, I've been there. That was my fourth season, and we honestly thought we were going to get promoted because we'd done so well in the league. I mean, we choked the last game of the season. I mean, Reading only needed a draw, and we needed to win. And obviously, Jamie Keown came off the bench and scored in the 76th minute to let Reading go up. So we went through the playoffs. And prior to that, we'd absolutely smashed Stoke as well. 3 weeks prior, we absolutely smashed them at our place. And then I must say, when we got to the final, you'd probably say to the final, we actually probably did choke. And Stoke just went on momentum, and my good old friend Dion Burns scoring a goal there, and then they, like I say, for them, rest is history now. I'm in the promised land for the last however many years they've been there, you know.
That's right. Well, you then joined Sheffield Wednesday, managed by Terry Yorath, I believe. He was another legendary manager. What was it like playing under him?
Terry, the gaffer there, he was a cool cat, you know. He was a cool cat. He brought me in. He brought me into the club, knowing what I'd done in the past 4 years at Brentford. You know what I mean? I just went there again. Another club, thinking coming from Brentford in front of 3,000, 5,000 fans week in, week out, knowing that Sheffield Wednesday just been relegated from the Prem, and they just got the players, Kevin Gerald Sabon and Kevin Pressman, players who had just got great calibre. And I'm thinking, like, again, just go there and just enjoy it and be part of it. But yeah, he was a great guy. He brought me in, helped me out, so it was good.
And I'm going to say Leon Knight. Try not to laugh.
Knight, my boy, bless him.
Come on, have you got any stories you could tell us about playing up front with him? Because, you two goal-scoring machines, especially at that club and the clubs that you play for afterwards.
Yeah, Leo's top boy. He was like my little brother. He came on loan from Chelsea, and then, like I said, I just sort of took him under my wing and just guided him. But he's just such a character, such a breath of fresh air. He obviously he's got his cheeky side to him. Many people don't like, but for me, I mean, because I knew him in and out. I was practically with him every day. And we'd train, we'd meet in the morning for training, and we'd leave training and go for lunch, just be with each other. Only forced him. And he was just a character, just a real character.
Things I've spoken to him a few times, especially when he's done the night vision shows for us, and he's mentioned, you know, playing alongside Desai during training and all these other players. When he joined Sheffield Wednesday, was he kind of like looked down upon by a lot of the players? Because obviously he came from Chelsea, he played alongside these World Cup winners, and did some players think, oh, you know, he's a bit up his own backside kind of thing? Because we know that he's not like that.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, with Leon, for me, Leon is Leon. He is what he is. He's just He doesn't give a damn about what anyone says. He'll just go and do his own thing. And I think obviously players probably at Wednesday sort of perceived him a bit cocky in at times, you know. But like I said, he had the skill sets to go with that anyway. He just knew how to. But he was a great striker. I mean, he was so clinical, it was unbelievable. His finishing was top draw finisher. Mm.
And that shift for Wednesday, what was the pressure like? Because it's a big club, mate. We've seen over the years, you know, the Premier League years with David Hurst, Chris Waddle, even before that. So was it a massive pressure on your shoulders to deliver there?
Oh, massively. Look, I was going playing in front of 5,000 people the last 4 or 5 years. And then I go and make my debut against Sheffield United in front of 40,000. It was just like, it was surreal. Like I said, a team who's been in the Premiership for many a year with like all them legendary players in the past and even some great players who were still in the team when I signed. So pressure was just like, phew, you know what, people expecting big things of Lloyd Wilshere to score goals in the lower leagues. Can he come here and deliver, you know? I think I saved myself by scoring on my first touch in the Sheffield Derby, so I will be remembered by the Wednesday fans for that. But it was pressure. I must admit, I'm not shy to admit that. Coming from where I was before to there, but overall, I think I had some good times there though.
Great stuff. And after Wednesday, you played for a whole host of clubs like Reading, Brighton, Yeovil, and even had a second stint at Brentford. And the thing is, mate. Yeah. As you know, many footballers have played over 5 clubs in their career. So, do you think that perhaps moving clubs every couple of seasons kind of hindered your development, or did you learn something new each time?
With me, I think I always learned something new. A lot of the times for me, unfortunately, in my career, a lot of it was with me moving. It wasn't down to my ability or anything, I believe. It was more down to financial restraints.
Right.
When I was at Cheltenham, I had to leave Cheltenham to go to Brighton. And even when I was at Yeovil, I had to leave Yeovil to go to Cheltenham because they couldn't. So for me, it was more, a lot of it was due financial. But like, I think it's a great insight to be at different clubs. And not even just for football, just for personnel reasons in regards of just meeting new people as well. You know, you come across so many faces in football, and it's so nice to come across fellow players and teammates. So it's been a great experience that way.
So tell us about Ghana in 2006, because is it true you were injured and that prevented you from playing for the national team in the World Cup?
Yeah, massively, absolutely gutted. I was absolutely flying for Brentford that season. We weren't even the players, we were top of the league. We were top of the league for Brentford, flying, me and DJ Campbell scoring goals for fun. Then he actually left, but we were still... Then I started playing up top with Isaiah Rankin, and like I said, we were flying. And then when I got injured, I had a warm-up game in Germany against FC Stuttgart. I ruptured my groin. And when I look back here, I was a bit stupid in how I even got injured. I must admit, I knew my groin was a bit tight, but I'll always remember one of the boys played a ball through the middle, and because I was trying to impress and be eager, the ball was even going out of play, but I just wanted to try and chase down the left wing and keep it in. And also the ground was quite, I remember the ground was quite hard, and my studs gave way on the turf, and it just, my right leg just slipped on the turf, and all I felt was a rip. Mm-hmm. And I looked back to myself, you know what, the ball's actually going out, did I really need to try and chase it? But I guess that's hindsight. End up going to get the diagnosis was a ruptured groin, which at first I thought, you know, mate, it could get healed and I could probably make the World Cup. But then obviously the news wasn't best news after I came back, had the MRI and everything. And then obviously no World Cup for myself. And then even Brentford, we started in the playoffs and everything. So it was gutted.
Yeah. Because the thing is, with the greatest respect to Ping Pong and Addo, you probably would have been the third choice striker behind Azerbaijan and Mensah, who was at St Gallen at the time. Or even, I think, was it Amoa was up front, wasn't he, at Dortmund?
Yeah, exactly.
So you probably would have been third choice striker and would have played.
Yeah, for sure.
So, I can't imagine what you must have been going through at that time, knowing that, you know, it's a chance of a lifetime. And then you pick up an injury like that, which could have happened to really anyone.
Yeah, I mean, I went to Germany for a couple of games, so that was good. I always remember even in the stands, the fans were saying, "Hey, Wusu, you should be out there, you know." But yeah, like I said, that's life. It's how it is, though.
So, did you actually meet up with the players prior to the World Cup? Were you in any of the provisional squads beforehand?
Nah, so like the game before I got injured, I mean, that was during March, April.
Right.
Yeah, so the World Cup was June. So April, that when I got injured, I obviously saw the boys there. And then obviously when I got injured, like I went to Germany, so I was with the boys on camp for a little bit, which was nice to see, having, you know, sort of softened the blow a bit.
Fair enough. So how did the move to Adelaide United come about?
Yeah, so that one was because even prior, well, I remember the 1 year when I was at Reading, I had a phone call from Steve McMahon. He was at Perth Glory at the time. He said, Lloyd, this was back in 2005, yeah.
Right.
He said, Lloyd, Steve, he goes, I'm at Perth Glory, I'm looking for, he's kind of, and I said, there's a time now, no disrespect to A-League. I was like, no, I'm not ready then. So anyway, I'd been playing for Brighton, and I had a great season at Brighton. And I'll always remember, I was in the changing room, and my phone rings, so I answered it, and it's an agent called Richie Hinton. He goes, oh, hi Lloyd, it's Richie here, I'm an agent in Australia, there's a team here in Adelaide keen for you in the A-League. And I was like, to no disrespect, I was like, no, I don't really want to be going, freaking, I just fought Australian football like that and that. But anyway, when the physio overheard my conversation, he goes, oh Lloyd, what's that? He goes, was that about Australia? I go, yeah, somebody's asking me about, telling me a team in Australia is good, blah, 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 they're keen to sign me. And he goes, oh, you remember Paul Reid that used to play here? I said, yeah. He goes, oh, he's out there now. He says, oh, I'll give you his number, maybe just give him a call and see. So then I got home that evening, and I gave Reid a call. So I really said, some agents called me up, and he's keen for me to come out there. And he goes, oh, yeah. He goes, it's actually his agent as well, which you're getting him. I said, okay, I can also like it. I said, look, it's great, you know, I mean, great lifestyle, it's, the football's good, we're even going to Asian Champions League, so that was sort of more of a carrot to me. When I went into that Asian Champions League, I was thinking, you know what, it could be I've never been able to play the Champions League here in England or in Europe, so maybe try the Asian one. So anyway, I phoned up the agent, I said, I'm more than happy to view the possibility, if the club's willing to fly me out there to have a look, I'll have a come and have a look. So that was cool. That's all I gave him, said to him, come and have a look. So the club agreed. So after Brighton season's finished, I flew out to Adelaide, and I must admit, when I got there, brother, I was pleasantly surprised. I think probably they could have put the red carpet out for me, like, when I got there. But I got there, I was like, you know what, this is okay, you know, this is not bad. So I had a look around the training ground, met up with a few of the players. The boys made me feel welcome. They even took me for dinner one evening, and then what's up? I mean, they said to me, because I said to the agent, "I'm not going out there to try. I'm not going out there to trial or nothing." You know what I mean? They already know what I'm all about. So he goes, "Oh, now they just want to have. They just want to make sure that you can move." And I said, "Okay." I said, "I'll have a little." So they had a little training game, and I must admit, I absolutely tore up this training game against the two at the time. The two Socceroo boys who were sitting around, Robbie Cornwaite and Ian Fife, and then Eugene Galekovic in goal. And I just absolutely ripped it. And all of a sudden, after I finished the training, the managing director's phoned me because I know they want to sign you straight away after seeing you. So I was like, look, I'm still keen for, I'm still exploring opportunities in England as well. Because what was happening is, because when I left Brighton sort of, Terry, Russell Slade sort of, I thought to myself, I'd been brilliant for Brighton. I've gone there 14 games, saved them from relegation. So I believed that I was entitled to at least a 2-year deal. And I said to the gaffer, Russell, so I said, gaffer, look, I want a 2-year deal. You can even get, I even want less money. Because now I'm just only going to give you 1-year deal. But I thought I was entitled to a 2-year deal.
Right.
So they offered me a 2-year deal. So I said to the club, look, if they come out with X, Y, Z, I'm probably more their man. And then prior to that, a few other British clubs come in, Gillingham, Millwall. But I thought, you know what, let me go and explore this, you know. I thought this is going to do it. So in the end, ended up, came to Australia, signed on the dotted line, and then, yeah, it was all good. But then when I got there, got struck down with swine flu and pneumonia. So it actually killed my playing start in Australian football.
Yeah, the problem is when something like that happens, you don't get off on the right foot, do you? And immediately you're up against it. I know you left Adelaide and ended up playing in Cyprus. Now, I know you do a bit of DJing. I think you knew that Napa was about an hour and a half away, didn't you?
Yeah. Yeah, the old Napa. So, like I said, I ended up going back to Cyprus. Got a deal there, signed a year deal there. But even when I got there, things weren't looking too rosy when I sort of started seeing we weren't getting paid. So I said to the agent at the time, who was looking after me, said, you know what, get me back to England before the before the September window closes so I can go. So I was there for about, I was there in Cyprus for about six to eight weeks, and then I just took Natalie to get me out of there before it all goes tits up. And then, so I just ended up coming back to England and, I signed for Barnet for a short term.
There you go. Well, look, you must have enjoyed Australia because you've since moved there permanently. Are you working at the International Football School still?
Yeah, no. Unfortunately for myself, I got made redundant in January from there. So I've actually, on the Central Coast. So I came back to Sydney, and I got a little gig at one of the top private schools called Cranbrook. So I've been coaching there, but now the footballing season's finished, so just sort of snowball effect, slowly but surely things are developing some other things and doing bits and bobs. And but since I've been here, it's been good. Like I said, I've been here, been doing acting as well, done some modelling. Opportunities, mate. Things have happened.
Excellent, brilliant. So is that what you're looking to get into, the modelling side of things, or?
Nah, not really. I mean, football was my bread and butter, you know. That's all I've ever known. But I've had good stints here and there, TV commercials and little documentaries and TV series I've done since I've been in the 4 or 5 years. And obviously, I want to get involved with the TV stuff in regards to the commentating and analyst stuff with Fox Sports and stuff. So still networking with them and just trying to knock on doors.
That's good to hear, mate. That's good to hear. Well, look, before I let you go, tell me about Adelaide United, because I know that they've appointed a new manager, a German fellow called Marco Kurz. They had a Spanish manager before that, and it just appears that in the A-League, a lot of teams feel that you've got to bring in a foreign manager to evolve, even though the two sides that contested the A-League final last season both had Australian head coaches. What do you think the mentality like is like out there at the moment? Is it a bit backward, or do you think they're starting to kind of get to grips with how football really is supposed to be?
Yeah, no disrespect to Australian football. I've always said they're still 10 years behind easily. For example, for them to have a professional league structure for the last 12 years, the A-League, and only up to the last 2 years probably, you've had a youth team structure underpinning each club. You know what I mean? How can you have professional football and you haven't even got no youth structure underneath it? Yeah, and it's just only happened in the last, and that's only three teams in the A-League have actually got that at the moment. From under 13s all the way up to first grade, out of the 10 teams, that just shows the in depth of their thought process of Australian football. But I mean, they are working forward towards that. There's more kids playing football here. And reference to the managers again, a lot of the clubs believe, obviously because of the curriculum in the past, it's been the Dutch, the German. They want to try and play this beautiful brand of football. So they go and employ all these foreign coaches. But like I said, the two clubs who were fighting last year with Graham Arnold and Popovic, who are young Australian men. Obviously, Arnie's not too young, but Popovic, some good managers there. So there's some good young Australian managers here in this country. It's just a matter of whether the clubs give them a chance to take the head coaches roles.
That's right. And it looks as if they're probably going to qualify for the World Cup because they've got Syria in the World Cup qualifying playoff, which, no disrespect to Syria, I can't see the Socceroos losing that one. What do you reckon?
Well, you say that they've still got, if they beat Syria, they've still got to go and play a team in North America.
Yeah, that's true.
So there's four games for them to get past first until they get there. So I think it's still going to be tough for them, because no disrespect, the generation of footballers now in Australia, they've lost that golden generation of the Timmy Cahills and Lucas Neils and Harry Kewells that they had before, and for Dukas. Nowadays they've got some young players, but they're just not up to it, mate. And that's how I look at it. They're just literally just not up to it.
No. And do you think that's down to them not having a decent youth system down there, or is it because a lot of their players are playing in Europe?
Yeah, a lot of them in Europe as well. But again, like I'd say, because of the youth setup, there's no structure here, and I just expect the lack of quality of coaches in the youth development. That's why a lot of these kids, they say, you know what I mean? Because there's no pathway for them. They get to a certain age from the state teams. There's nowhere else for them to go. So that's why a lot of these so-called good ones try and give it a go overseas, the Germanys, the Belgians, the France, you know what I mean, and even England. So it's a tough ask for them. It's a tough ask.
So does it just boil down to money then? Is there not enough money to plump into the sport?
Oh, again, mate, we could have another story on that. Again, that's just another thing about the money. It's embarrassing. I mean, kids here in this country are paying to play football. Mm. They're paying like $2,500 to play for It's just ridiculous. Ridiculous. And with the amount of pay, they're not even getting the quality of coaching anyway. So it's
so
just...
Are they paying, like, youth academies? Are they paying yeah. you know... So, okay, right.
So for example, or any rep team, any kids who play from in the rep association teams from under 13s up to under 16s, they actually, or even here, I think they even up to 18s as well, they pay the so-called registration to some anything, depending on what league you're in, anything between $1,500 to $3,200 a year to play football.
Yeah, and I guess that they get like the uniforms and all that kind of stuff with it.
Yeah,
but
they get a kit and two or three training sessions a week, but to play it, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, I can imagine. Well, I don't want to end the show on a downer. How do you think Brentford are going to do this season?
I mean, at the moment, it's not looking too good at the moment the way they've started off. I mean, I was with them. About a month ago when I came back and I was watching them trains, looking good, some great players there. Obviously then they sold a few now over the window, and then I've been looking at the results. When I wake up on Sunday morning, it's not looking the best, and even last night I see they lost 2-1. So they need to hopefully kickstart this, start picking up some points now to get back up the table. So I have pure faith in Smudger, Dean Smith, the gaffer there. He's one of my old teammates. He's a good lad, and he knows what he's got to get out of the players. Hopefully they can produce now.
Yeah, we've got the new stadium.
Get some results.
We've got the new stadium coming out, and you know, even Carlos Carvajal last night, you know, the Sheffield Wednesday boss said that Brentford are in a false position. You know, got players like Nico Yanaris who are doing pretty well, so they can turn it around. They're just one of those teams where they just need a bit of a kick up the backside, and then their season will turn around.
Yeah, I hope so. I hope that happens, because like I said, the last 2 to 3 years they've always been up in the mix, and hopefully, like I said, with the new stadium coming on, they can kickstart and try and get to that promised land.
Absolutely. Well, Lloyd, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you, my friend. Thank you ever so much for your time. Before I let you go, would you like to tell our listeners your Twitter handle and any way they can interact with you on social media?
So they can get hold of me on my Lloyd Owusu football. I've got a Lloyd Owusu Twitter. That's right, Lloyd Owusu Insta, and then I've got my personal one, Lloyd Owusu Official, and then my Twitter account is Lloyd Owusu. And what else is there? Yeah, Twitter. And my Facebook. Football pages, Lloyd Owusu Football. Excellent. So they can catch me all on there.
Great stuff. Well, Lloyd, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you, mate. Hope to have you back on sometime soon.
Anytime, pleasure.